Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. This is Leslie Dorries. Now, I've always been told that you're never supposed to modify the word unique, but marriage is truly a unique relationship. It's unique in that it is both an emotional relationship and a legal contract. But just like when you click OK to the legalese when you update your apps on your computer programs without really reading what you're agreeing to, do you really know what terms you agreed to when you said, I do? Just taking the traditional vows, you promise to love, honor, and cherish. But these are kind of nebulous terms. What does it mean? And do your partner and you agree about what those terms mean? Then we talk about for better or worse. Who decides? What does it mean to forsake all others? But these are the things that you are legally agreeing to do. With a mortgage or credit card agreement, it is really clear when you're in default. But the terms aren't quite so clearly spelled out in a marriage. The devil, like everything else, is in the details. But like all contracts, marriage is an agreement between two parties. It's unique, though, in that it only takes one person to end it. It used to require a reason, but not anymore. We have no-fault divorces in every state, and now 80% of all divorce is initiated by one party. There's no clause requiring arbitration or mediation, and even if you use the ubiquitous irreconcilable differences, there's no requirement that shows you had to prove that you tried to reconcile them. And the buyout cost to get out of a marriage contract is considerable, half of your assets. So, in the continuing quest to provide information on how to do marriage better, I'm joined today by Beverly Willett, co-founder of the Coalition for Divorce Reform. Hey, Beverly.
Hi, Leslie. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I'm so glad you could join us. Now, that's a kind of a mouthful, Coalition for Divorce Reform. Can you tell my listeners what it is and why you started it?
Okay. Well, essentially, it is it's a volunteer organization at this point, and it's basically it's comprised of individuals who from all walks of life. Essentially, it is also nonpartisan, which I want to say at the outset, because not to get into this whole thing, but a lot of people, you know, think that, you know, divorce reform is some kind of conservative plot to take over, you know,
right,
marriages.
I'm right there with you.
And you know, and I happen to be, if I have to pick one camp or the other, which I don't like, and I don't like labels, I'm much more on the conservative Democratic side. Lots of people, who are advocating for divorce reform think as I do politically on other kind of social issues. Okay, so it is definitely it is bipartisan, the organization, and it is men and women. It is so people from all aspects on the political spectrum. There are lawyers, there are psychologists. People involved in marriage education. There are lawyers,
and so
journalists who write about this, scholars, family law scholars.
What's the goal of this coalition? What is it that all these wonderful people, all these diverse people, are trying to do?
Well, I think that the goal of the organization is basically two pronged, and I think that the goal of the organization being two-pronged is reflective of where the problem comes from with no-fault divorce in the first place. And that is, it stems, I think, from legal issues that are causing the problems in our society with divorce and the cultural issues. So I think that in forming the organization and thinking about our goals, we are trying to address both of those things, both the cultural and the legal. When I say cultural, that means talking about the issues, trying to create awareness about the effects of divorce, particularly mm-hmm. on children, creating awareness about the problems, creating awareness about the benefits of marriage and what people can do. So I think that we're trying to have that conversation, to create a public conversation and debate about these issues, and also look into, you know, where the problems are. And the other thing is, I think, which goes hand in hand, because as you recognized in your intro, is marriage is a contract. And so many of our laws, especially when you're trying to get out of a marriage, they're all the legal process that you need to go through. So,
right.
So
it's,
marriage
it's not
and
just...
divorce, it's a legal issue as well, and therefore our efforts are also focused on legislative reform, meaning revising the no-fault divorce law.
And, you know, I mean, but what I always hear when I talk about this, because I'm pro-marriage. Now, as I will state, I don't think everybody should be married. I'm not going, yeah, you have to be married, or nor do I think that every marriage can be saved. But what I run into is, well, okay, so now you're telling us if you want to change the no-fault divorce, now you're saying we have to go back into these marriages where somebody is at risk of physical harm, or I have to put up with the fact that my partner cheats all the time. And, you know, so it's kind of like that black or white, either we have to have absolutely no restrictions on it, or we're back into the old, you know, not good way that we were 50 years ago. So
well,
what's your response to that?
Okay, so let me just address that. And I think that is part of the problem. Part of the problem in our society, I mean, if we just start talking about these issues, which I think are reflective of greater issues in our society, is we're not listening. We're not listening to each other. We're not listening about the problems. We have our minds already made up about what we think and what we believe and what we believe someone is saying. And that's not what the Coalition for Divorce Reform and what I believe either. I'm totally on the same page with you. Yes, not all marriages can be saved, and yes, some marriages are worse for children to continue to be in where there's domestic violence and high conflict. So mm-hmm. that is absolutely in line with everything that we believe in terms of divorce reform, and any divorce reform that is affected will continue to have those interests protected. Interests of women and men who are in abusive relationships being able to get out of those relationships to protect themselves and protect their children. There's absolutely, we seek no impediment whatsoever, and our model legislation indeed has a caveat and a carve-out so that those interests continue to be protected. We reached out to lawyers, domestic violence providers, people of that nature to make sure to say, listen, look at this legislation and give us your input on this because we want to make sure that we do protect people. By the same token, I think what we've seen in our culture is that we've seen this pendulum swing completely the other way. Okay, we've seen it
right.
go from people complaining about, you know, well, we need to be able to get out of abusive relationships. We need to get out of relationships where there's serial infidelity. And by the way, we had that protection under fault-based divorce. You could get out of a marriage if there was infidelity.
Didn't that give rise to people like creating issues that weren't real just because, you know, okay, we had to find a fault as opposed to, you know, so you know, we'd set up this thing where, you know, we'd pretend to be having an affair just so we could get out of the marriage. How does what your organization trying to do address that kind of thing?
Well, let me just go back to the premise, I think, that is underlying that very question that you just asked, where people were colluding. In
mm-hmm.
that kind of a situation, aren't we looking at a situation then where two individuals are saying we want to get out of this marriage, but there is an infidelity, so one's got to say it? That seems to be more a situation where there's some kind of mutual consent.
Well, I don't know, but if I want out of my marriage and my partner doesn't, can't I just pretend I'm having an affair and kind of let my husband find, you know, find pictures, or, I mean, you know, I'm not really having an affair. And he or, you know, in my case, it would be a he, but that he or she still doesn't want to get out of the marriage. And I really want to kind of get back to that, because I really think that, you know, that the 80% of divorces that are really being initiated by one party and the other person really doesn't want it. So I want to get back to that about how does the Coalition for Divorce Reform impact that? What's your guys' goal with that?
With someone who just wants to get out of the marriage and doesn't want to have an impediment to get, well, that is a fundamental problem. I think that's at the root of everything here that we're talking about and our concept of what marriage is. I think we need to go back and we need to talk about what is marriage? What is this contract that we're entering into? What mm-hmm. obligations are we talking about? You know, this is all, I believe, what you just said to me was, well, what do we do about those people who say, well, gee, I'm not happy and I want to get out? I think that's a fundamental problem in our culture, the way that we view marriage, the way that we view divorce, and exercise our rights 80% of the time unilaterally to just say, hey, I'm out of here.
Right.
Because we're focused on me. And I think that is at the root of this whole entire problem that we have in our culture with family breakup, is that we have taken an institution that brings together two individuals to create an us, quote unquote, an us.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that institution, we have now grafted onto that institution, which is fundamentally about an us. And we've taken this whole new scheme that's all about me. So we have a system in place to address discontinuance of that contract that is
okay.
that doesn't fit the framework of the relationship that it applies to. And I think that's where I see the fundamental conflict, where we need to go back and talk about that.
I hear what you're saying about that, but here's the question that I have. Isn't that kind of like the tail wagging the dog? I mean, now I've done a couple of shows talking about marriage education, talking about just addressing kind of what you're talking about coming in on the front end of this and trying to help people understand that, like I said before, marriage is a truly unique relationship. There isn't anything else like it. And helping people understand what it is they're doing, but isn't kind of divorce reform, I mean, how does this play out in terms of if one person, you know, says, yeah, no, I'm not happy and I don't want to do this, how does changing the divorce laws change that?
Well, so let's go back and look at the kind of legislative reform that the Coalition for Divorce Reform is advocating. Because,
okay.
and I think the issue of doing away with no fault is another issue, which we can, I'm happy to talk about. But the particular approach that the Coalition for Divorce Reform is taking would not do away with no fault divorce. And so in those instances where ultimately people want to exercise the right that they have now under the no-fault divorce laws to become divorced, that would ultimately happen. Now, let's just put aside the what I spoke about, the high-conflict marriages, those where there's an alcohol problem.
Right, the people actually, right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Let's just put all that
people
aside.
Aren't safe.
Right,
okay.
Because we've already talked about the fact that that's a carve-out, and we're talking about basically what we're talking about here, I think, if we're on the same page, is we're talking about all those other marriages. And what we know from the research is that all those other marriages are low-conflict marriages. And what we
right.
know from the research is that the bulk of them, at least two-thirds of them, okay, are low-conflict, okay, where there's no imminent danger to anyone continuing to stay in the relationship. Okay. So ultimately, no fault would remain in place under the legislative plan, model legislation that we have drafted. However, what we also know is that there is research that supports the view that many of these marriages can, in fact, be saved. That if we can actually slow down the process, and if we can actually do something in the interim, in that waiting period that we place within the law that doesn't exist, you know, in many places or there's not a very long waiting period, if we can insert something in there that is helpful, that has a proven track record of helping couples to be able to take a step back. I think that's really what it is, taking a step back. Because when you're caught up in you know, the complications of life in our society as we know it, it's rough out there for
well,
many
but
people.
But I need to step in because I'm in North Carolina, and in
right.
North Carolina we actually do have a one-year waiting period from the time a couple separates, and they actually have to be separated for 366 days before one of the parties can file for divorce. So that's a full year. That's a lot of time. And so, you know, so there is a lot of time for reflection, but guess what? There is nothing that they have to do within that year. They don't have to go to a parenting class. You know, if they have children, to learn how to co-parent, you know, they don't have to do anything. So what is different? What would what you're suggesting be different?
Okay, so I agree with you, and I do know about North Carolina because that is actually one of the states where we had legislation that was modeled.
Right,
off
they were going to. Well, the last
yeah.
thing that I heard was that they wanted to increase it to 2 years, but there still wasn't any requirement for people. And of course, being a therapist, I know that forcing people into therapy doesn't usually work either.
No, there actually was something that was I call our plan a pause with a purpose, so that during that waiting period, okay, there are classes which don't have to, the parents don't have to take the classes together, but there
mm-hmm.
is information that is given to them, as I said, which is research-based, to help them with their with conflict resolution, with communication problems, with financial problems they may be undergoing, and it also gives them information about the effect of divorce. What's your life going to look like afterwards? What are the potential ramifications? And with the PDRA, we basically decided not to focus on all marriages at the outset, at least, but on those where there is the greatest harm. And we have found that the greatest harm from divorce, especially in low-conflict marriages, is on children. So basically,
well, of course,
our legislation is only focused on parents with minor children. So those parents who have minor children, let's say in North Carolina or wherever it is, during that period of waiting, they would be given all of the information that I just went through, along with information about the potential effects of divorce on their children. And I think most people really don't know these things. They actually don't know these things. So it would take the period of time now that people have to wait and give them something that they can think about and give them actual skills that they might be able to use. And then it would give them time to actually work on their marriage and go forward with some sort of efforts at reconciliation during that time before they pull the trigger. And we have
if you look,
let me just say one thing real quickly. I mean, I know that North Carolina, because that's where you are, is on the high end of the waiting period. But if
Very
you look
so.
At the entire country, you will see that North Carolina is way up there. Most states have very short waiting periods. And
or none at all.
Or not at all, or like 30 days. I think in Georgia it's 30 days. So what we have seen is we have seen not only fault-based divorce being abolished and this institution of unilateral divorce being implemented by all 50 states, we have seen the waiting period that also were in the law. We have seen them being repealed one after the other and small little time periods being inserted. One thing also that surprised me a couple of years ago when I was doing some research on this is that I found that not only were there longer waiting periods for divorce, but that most states also had a waiting period for a second marriage or a third marriage.
Interesting.
You
mean to get married? You mean there's a waiting period that they have to have before they can get married?
But after their divorce, there were waiting periods for couples who were divorced seeking to get married again. There was a waiting period between the time that they were divorced from their first or second or whatever their last marriage ended.
Mm-hmm.
There was a waiting period from that time and an extensive waiting period. We're not talking 30 days.
Right.
You know,
so I just want to
license in your blood test. We're talking maybe a year or 6 months. There was a waiting period before you could get married again.
Okay, and I want to follow up. I want to follow up with that, but I want to remind my listeners that this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net, and I'm Leslie Dorries. So Beverly, I want to go back to that about this waiting period. How is that being received? Because I have to be honest, this is the first I've ever heard about it. And how many states is that in?
What, for remarriage?
Yeah, to wait before, interestingly enough, the reason why I'm asking is because, you know, my parents got divorced over 30 years ago, and the divorce came through December 1st, and they were both remarried by Christmas. So
there was no waiting period. That does not exist anymore. I'm saying those waiting periods don't exist anymore. And I don't know what particular state they happen to be in, but I just know that there were those waiting periods
in many states across the country.
They do not exist now.
Okay, all right. So I'm sorry, I was confused. I thought you were saying that people had added those.
No, they do not exist anymore. So we have basically what we have done is we have for the last 45 years, we have just taken all the protections for marriage, for people who are married, for children who are in marriages. We one by one, every single protection has just fallen by the wayside. And all we do is we focus on the symptoms. Focusing on the symptoms.
Isn't this a recreating of the or a creating of the nanny system with the government telling us what we can and can't do with our lives? I mean, I'm sitting here listening. I mean, I don't know if you can hear my listeners, but they're like going, well, but I don't want some government entity telling me that I have to wait to either get married, get divorced, get remarried. You know, what do you say to my listeners?
There are two points that I'd like to make, and if I don't come back to the second one, please grab me and make me come back to it. And that is, the first thing is that it's just a complete fallacy to say, you know, I don't want government in the bedroom, and I don't want government legislating, you know, morality to me, because as far as I'm concerned, nowhere is government more in the bedroom than when you're talking about divorce. So when you're talking about, divorce, you've got the legal system.
Well, you've got judges. Yeah, you've got the legal system in there. Mm-hmm.
You've got the legal system immediately in there. And you basically, unless you are agreeing with your spouse on what's going to happen, on how the property is going to be divided up, on how the two of you are going to live and exist and work and pay your bills in the future, how you're going to raise your children, what churches you're going to take them to, whether you're going to educate them in the public school system or privately, whether you're going to see them on Christmas or Thanksgiving. Every single decision about your child, your children, and your own personal life, your livelihood, those decisions.
Well, yeah, you're right.
By the government, and not only are they going to be made by the government is going to oversee that forever.
Well, at least until your children are 18. But yeah, I mean, and I agree
that's
with
a
that.
Lot of
but
time.
It could possibly be, and you know, but so I mean, and again, there's also benefits to being from financial benefits. To being married, there's tax benefits, and I can't remember, it's something like 130
exactly.
or some huge number of benefits that you get by being married from the government. So I see what you're saying, that the government is involved, but why should the government tell me that I have to stay married to this particular person?
Well, that was really the second point that I was going to make, and I guess that goes back to this whole. The legal
mm-hmm.
nature of the marriage contract itself. And you know, I don't practice law right now, but my background is as a lawyer. I have a law degree, and that is, it is the only contract that I know of where the party who breaches it is the party that wins. It's the party who is the wrongdoer, the law sides with the wrongdoer. It's the only contract that I know that can be unilaterally breached, and there can be no compensation to the party that has been harmed, not even an opportunity to defend themselves.
As I said at the beginning, yes, marriage, that makes marriage a completely unique contract. You've just stated some very important things, which maybe people don't understand. But I guess, you know, I mean, but there's a part of me that says, you know, but it's about love and it's about feeling. And do I deserve, you know, is retribution or maybe retribution's too strong of a word, but should my partner have to pay to get out of
the
relationship?
But here's the question: where's the protection for the person who's harmed? Where is the protection for the person who is honoring the contract? Where is the protection for the person who is putting the good of the union and the good of the family above their own individual wants and needs, which, as we know, you know, our happiness fluctuates minute by minute. And
sure.
Yet we allow an individual in this contract, which I believe is the most important contract in our society. There is no other contract in our society that is more important than this contract. And it is the contract that we give the least protection to. We have the least protections for this contract, and it's the most important one upon which the basis of our entire society is constructed, and we give it the least protection. Where's the fairness? Where's the due process and the fairness to the individual who is trying to honor it and is getting no help and protection whatsoever? Where's the compassion for them? We want to give all the compassion and understanding for the person who's just at the moment not happy. Because guess what? In our society, and again, these are such deep, deep issues, and it's one of the reasons why initially I said to you, this issue is both a cultural problem and a legal issue.
And a legal one.
But
mm-hmm.
we cannot sit with pain anymore. We do not know how to sit and be still with our pain and our uneasiness.
Well, and I think that goes. I think that goes to my, you know, to that better or worse, you know, part of the marriage vow is that we're all in for the better, but what is the worse, and how do we know? I mean, and there are statistics that show that couples who stay, who are in a state of unhappiness, but they stay together 5 years later, within 5 years, things have completely turned around for many of these couples. So it is, it does go to that, you know, riding the wave. But here's the question that I have, because I know that I've got listeners going, but I have told my partner I'm not happy. I have given voice to this idea, and you know, I'm trying to honor the contract, but even though on the surface they are honoring the contract, they're not, because they're ignoring what I'm saying to them.
And I think that then goes back to why we have this plan for divorce reform. Why this plan doesn't just have couples sitting around waiting for the clock to tick. It gives them real information and real help. And I think that is, we need to have some kind of a balance to our approach, because, you know, what you're saying is, okay, so what about those people? Okay, I can hear that, I can understand that, and you know, I've even been able to see that for myself, that, you know, not everyone who wants, you know, to get out of their marriage because they're unhappy, I don't believe that everyone has got some kind of, you know, negative, you know, intention behind that.
Right.
I truly don't believe that. And obviously we know that some marriages are breaking up, you know, for reasons other than infidelity. So it's not the case that everyone is saying that, but they're having an affair behind the scenes and not telling anyone because they just want to go off to where they think it's better. So I really agree with you. I believe that some couples are struggling. But you know, a lot of them aren't. A lot of them are, you know, can't sit with the pain and don't want to.
We've become a conflict avoidance society, and I get that. And you and I mean, and you and I could talk about this for a long time, and I'm hoping that the listeners took something away about, you know, this process that's going on potentially in their own legislatures about this Coalition for Divorce Reform, what it is, more importantly, what it is not, that it isn't everybody has to stay married forever and be unhappy, that there are carve-outs, that it's comprehensive. And the one thing that I really want my listeners to take away is that if you do not want to be blindsided by divorce, if you really want to honor the contract that you entered into, then number one, you need to know define the terms of that contract, of that marriage contract that's both emotional and legal. You need to be able to talk with your partner about how well you each are holding up that end, your end of the contract, so that you pay attention when your partner's telling you that something's wrong. Try to find solutions. This is the point of the show, is to provide you with those solutions, and so that you don't end up, you know, being confronted with the devastation that is divorce. Beverly and her group are working on the end, you know, the end of it, but from day one, start, you know, figure out what you need to do to make your marriage good, and then go out and do it, is really what I've got to say. And so, again, I want to thank Beverly for joining me. Beverly, can you tell my listeners where they can get more information about the Coalition?
Yes. Our website is www.divorcereform.us. Let me just make sure of that.
So .us, not .org, not .com, but .us.
Yeah, I think so. Let me just type it in. You know how sometimes you type something in and you just don't, yeah.
Yeah, it's like trying to remember your own cell phone number. It's like, I don't know what my phone number is. I don't ever call it.
Yeah, it is .us. Divorcereform.us.
Okay, and so, again, listeners, this is Happily Ever After, is just the beginning.
Can I just say one other thing, too, is look for us on Facebook, because you know, we have lots of information, and we have a copy of our proposed legislation, as well as one thing that I think is
so knowledge
right
is power.
Side,
go find out what this is all about.
Yes, on the right side of the website, there's a really nice handout you can click on and print out. One thing we didn't really get to talk about during our discussion, Leslie, and that is the harmful effects on children. And we have a one-page sort of bullet point thing there that outlines all the research. And so I would just say to parents, you know, take a look at that. I think it's important in the whole situation when you're digesting what you're going to do is that you really do include your children in your thoughts. Because
well, it's absolutely critical. You're not going to get any argument from me.
Right. They get no vote whatsoever. And I think that you really need to take a more holistic approach to looking at everything.
Right.
And you really need to consider the effect on your children and what it means to your children. So take a look at that.
And Beverly, again, thank you so much for joining us and giving us all this wonderful information. Again, this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Please join me every week as we continue through this process of making your marriage better. And so until next week, stay loving.